So to start our workshop, we're going to read a couple of writings from Dr. Taibo. And just so those of you who don't know, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about who Dr. Taibo is. He was a psychiatrist who was an early pioneer in coupling the principles and philosophy of Alcoholics Anonymous with psychiatric knowledge of alcoholism. He was a strong supporter of AA throughout his life and consistently worked for acceptance of his views concerning alcoholism in the medical and psychiatric professions. He served on the Board of Trustees for AA from 1957 to 1966 and was chairman of the National Council on Alcoholism in 1950. He had much to share with us on the disease of the mind. And so with that, I'm going to have Laura McShee come up and read what you guys have a copy of, Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, page 449 and 450.
You can follow along. It's a little long, but...
Hi, I'm Laura, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Laura.
The fact of hitting bottom to produce a surrender, which cut the ego to size, was evident. In time, two additional facts manifested themselves. The first was that a reduced ego has marvelous recuperative powers. The second was that surrender is an essential disciplinary function and experience. The first is merely repeating a fact known to you all. It is common knowledge that a return of the full-fledged ego can happen at any time. Years of abstinence are no insurance against its resurgence. No OA, regardless of his veteran status, can ever relax his guard against the encroachments of a reviving ego. Recently, an OA, writing to another, reported that he was suffering, he feared, from halitosis, a reference to the smugness and self-complacency which so easily can creep into the individual with years of abstinence behind him. The assumption that one has all the answers, and the contrary, that one needs to know no answers but just to follow OA, are two indicators of trouble. In both cases, open-mindedness is notably absent. Perhaps the commonest manifestation of the return of ego is witnessed in the individual who falls from his tainted cloud, a state of mind familiar to you all. The blissful pink cloud state is the logical aftermath of surrender. The ego, which is full of striving, just quits, and the individual senses peace and quiet within. The result is an enormous feeling of relief, and the person flies right up to his pink cloud and thinks he has found heaven on earth. Everyone knows he is doomed for a fall, but it is perhaps not equally clear that it is the ego slowly making its comeback which forces the descent from the pink cloud into the arena of life, where, with the help of OA, he can learn how to become an abstinent person and not an angel. I could go on with many more examples familiar to you all to show you the danger of ever assuming that the ego is dead and buried. Its capacity for rebirth is utterly astounding and must never be forgotten. My second finding, that surrender is a disciplinary experience, requires explanation. The ego, basically, must be forging continuously ahead, and it operates on the unconscious assumption that it, the ego, should never be stopped. It takes for granted that it is right to go ahead. It has no expectation of ever being stopped, and hence no capacity to adjust to that eventuality. Stopping says, in effect, no, you cannot continue, which is the essence of disciplinary control. The individual who cannot take a stopping is fundamentally an undisciplined person. The function of surrender in OA is now clear. It produces that stopping by causing individuals to say, I quit. I give up my headstrong ways. I've learned my lesson. Very often, for the first time in that individual's adult career, he has encountered that necessary discipline which halts him in his headlong pace. And this happens because he can surrender and truly feel, thy will, not mine, be done. When that is true, we have become, in fact, obedient servants of God. The spiritual point at that moment is a reality. We have become members of the human race. I have now presented two points, namely, first, the ego is revivable, and second, surrender is a disciplinary experience. I next wish to discuss their significance to OA as I see it. Primarily, they say quite simply that OA can never be just a miracle. The single act of surrender can produce abstinence by its stopping effect on the ego.
Okay. I'm sorry. I hope everyone has copies of the next reading. Compliance, partial surrender, and Michelle is going to read that for us. Surrender. Now that's confronted with the question, what does produce wholehearted acceptance? My answer is, as before, surrender. But surrender is a step not easily taken by human beings. In recent years, because of my special interest in the phenomenon of surrender, I have become aware of another conscious and unconscious phenomenon, namely compliance, which is basically partial acceptance or partial surrender, and which often serves as a blast to surrender. One of the first things to recognize is the fact that the presence of compliance blocks the capacity for true acceptance. Since compliance is a form of acceptance, every time the individual is faced with the need to accept something, he falls back on compliance, which serves for the moment. The individual consciously believes that he has accepted, but since he has no real capacity to accept, he is swinging in the other direction. His seeming acceptance of things of the past. In other words, the best an inwardly complying person can do toward acceptance is to comply. During treatment, the patient regularly is surprised to learn that his previous tendency to agree in order to be agreeable was merely a lot of compliance without any genuine capacity to accept. Number six. Yeah. If you Google Dr. Harry Tybo, he's written a lot of letters and papers on alcoholism, and this is kind of one of the main ones that comes up, the compliance versus surrender, and there's a lot of other things on acceptance. It's really, really great. So at this time, I'm going to have you guys decided who's speaking first?
We can talk about it.
Okay, well, you're next to me, so
okay.
Here we go. I'm going to turn the meeting over to Holly, and we're going to hear her for about 10 minutes.
Hi, I'm Holly, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Holly.
Oh, that's loud. I'm passing my pictures around, just so it kind of makes the what it was like very, you can just look. That's what it was like, okay? Just to tell my story real quick, I came into Overeaters Anonymous about in 1993 for the first time, okay, that was compliance. That year and a half was compliance. And as I'm listening to this, I could absolutely see it. And I went back out. I stopped coming for 8 years. So when I came back in August of 2002 at 280 pounds and absolutely done, I was absolutely done with my life, with overeating, with whatever. I'll try to describe to you what that felt like. You hear a lot of descriptive things about, you know, like what made me come back in. And I'm going to tell you probably the best description would be spiritual bankrupt. I think that's the best description I could say. I felt like I was flatlining. I had overeaten for so many years that I had no feelings anymore. I didn't feel joy. I didn't feel sad. I just ate. I had no feelings. So I truly believe that I don't know what actually made me make the decision to come back in, but at some time in that time, I made a decision that I was really done eating. And And what I've heard too is the term game over. Game over. I was done. I had to do something. So just have that little bit of knowledge I had the first time in Overeaters Anonymous, that was my next step. So I came back in August 2002, and I listened. I came in and I listened, and I had no hope of doing anything. It wasn't even a thought in my head to lose weight. That wasn't a thought anymore. That's how bad it was. I just needed to be somewhere where there were people that understood me. So when I came back in, I got a sponsor within a month. And my first day of abstinence is September 28, 2002. So first day I called the sponsor. And what she did with me was I surrendered my food. And I thought, okay, this is what I'm going to eat today. It's that simple. And then I followed her instruction. No matter how wacky I thought it was, I was, like I say, I was done. I followed her instruction. I called her every morning. We started working the steps. And then we got a food plan that worked for me. All this happened, and I started losing weight, and I started to, I wasn't clear for a long time, okay, but I did it. I did what she told me to. I didn't question. We worked the steps. I worked the steps steadily in my program for these 8.5 years that I've been abstinent. It took me about 2.5 years to lose the weight. I got down to a healthy weight, a little bit lower than I came back up with the help of my sponsors. And I surrender my food every day. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a garden variety compulsive overeater, all right? I surrender my food the night before to my sponsor. I follow a food plan that works for me. I don't vary from that. It's like I need that part of my disease over here, like with somebody. That's what I do every day. And the reason I'm able to do that is because I continuously work the steps. I just keep working the steps on whatever's going on. I went through the first time with a sponsor. I've changed sponsors a couple times, but I just keep on going through. Whether I have a problem of this day, like a problem with work, I do the steps on my work, or I do an inventory on my work for a couple of days and give it away. Get my character defects down on paper, ask God to remove them. That's what I do. That's how I work my program. I want to make it really clear how it works for me. And it was a matter of, this morning I picked up I read the big book every morning, but what I really wanted to concentrate on was, I read the whole chapter, There is a Solution. And in there, I wrote down, there's a million things in that chapter. I mean, when I feel at all like I need to be just like back to basics, I read There is a Solution, because it tells us exactly how it was, what the fellowship is about, and what to do. That's exactly what it says, but it's something there. There is no middle of the road solution. What I believe is that when I came into Overeaters Anonymous 2002, and up to this day, up to this very day, I'm done, all right? I'm going to follow instruction, and I'm going to work the program. And what the steps did for me is it gave me a conscious contact with God. God is the director of my life today. And I do every little schmaltzy thing that I can to keep that connection with God. Whatever's going on, I write it out, I put it in my God box, and I keep the lid shut. I don't need to take that back out. And when I do, I just need to be reminded, put it back in, whatever's going on. This is the way I want to live today. I actually want to, I want to have that conscious contact, because this is the treatment for my disease, a conscious contact with God. Every day is a new day, and every day I check in with God so I don't have to think about something comes up during the day and I want to go to the food. That's exactly what I don't want to do. For the past week, I've been reading through these readings, and I went on the internet and looked up a little bit more about Dr. Tybo. And when I started the program in 2002, I was in a group called APOR, and we did a lot of work on Dr. Tybo. So it is that surrender versus compliance. I think that for me, the first time I was in, like I say, that was compliance. I could listen to you, but I wasn't going to do any of the work. I was just going to say, okay, I'm a compulsive overeater and I can do this food plans, but most of the day no sugar, and that's just fine. But I don't need to do any of the reading and writing. I don't need to make a conscious contact with God. I don't need to do any of that because I can either do this or I can go to Weight Watchers, can I? If I was that kind of an overeater, if I was just overweight, I can do something else that's a lot easier, takes a lot less time. That's not me. I'm an addict. I'm an addict of food, and I need to work this program to the best of my ability every day to live a life like I want. I want to live my life like a woman in recovery. I want to show up every day peaceful, calm, and happy. I want to be happy. So this is what I want from my program. And then on top of it, after doing all that, thanks, I get to pass that along to other people who want the same thing. And that is the gift of the program. And that's what keeps me abstinent. I have sponsors that I talk to every day, and I pass along my program just as I do it. Now, everybody's different, but I pass it along just how I do it, and then I have to let go, let them work their own program. And I also get to do a lot of service, and that takes me out of myself. So to wrap it up, that's how I work my program. I pray every morning for surrender. Just let me. I just say, just God, what do you want me to be today? And if I need to stop during the day and do it again, which I always do, I stop during the day and do it again. I pick up another book. I also like the AA 24 hours a day. I keep that at work because that meditation for the day, it nails it every single day. I don't know why it is, but if I'm anxious at work, I pick that up and I read that and then I go like somewhere quiet and sit. I go out in the sun actually and stand in the sun for a while and just meditate. Working with a sponsor today, she gave me direction, and this is week two of doing this. She had me go. She had me buy a white rose, and I put it on my desk at work in a vase. All right. Now, mind you, this is not me. but I did it for 2 weeks in a row, and I set it up with a friend of mine. She's going to give me this white rose every week because she's a florist, which is really cool. So I get a white rose every week, every Tuesday, and I put it on my desk. That is surrender, all right? White rose, I look at it, it's right here, all right? Because, lately I've been having some work issues. So I don't care what it looks like. I'm going to do what it takes. That's what surrender is to me. So I really appreciate being here, I'm glad that all you guys are here, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Holly. And now I'm going to turn the mic over to Harlan.
Hi, I'm Harlan. I'm a compulsive overeater. I came in 1979. I've lost a little over 500 pounds since then, and I currently have 12 years of back-to-back abstinence. Harlan, thank you. On page 58 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says what I refer to as step zero. It says very simply, if you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. Step zero. Where it begins. How does it begin for me? The difference for me between compliance and surrender is in compliance, I am still thinking about what I can do to amend or change what you're telling me. I am not yet out of ideas. And my first mentors in this program said to me, and I have a thing at home on the refrigerator and a bookmarker, are you out of ideas yet, kid? Are you out of ideas? When I came into these rooms, I was 25 years younger than anybody in that room and 400 or 500 pounds fatter than anybody in that room. And they would constantly say to me, are you out of ideas yet, kid? Are you out of ideas yet, kid? And when they pointed this out, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. The difference between compliance and surrender is searing, unbearable pain. There is nothing else that is going to drive me to a place of surrender. On page 263 in the fourth edition, the first Oxford group step, which is where we get our steps from, step one actually came from Dr. Silkworth. Two comes from Jung. 3 through 12 comes from the Oxford group movement. The Oxford groupers were not concerned with alcoholism. They were people practicing first century Christianity to the best of their ability. But what did they teach Ebby? What did they teach Bill and the original people? Number one, complete deflation. In order for me to deflate a basketball, a balloon, what have you, or an ego, I must devoid it and empty it completely of what is inside presently to fill it up with something else. Simple concept. But the ego, as Dr. Tybo points out to us over and over and over again, resurrects itself beautifully. If only the rest of us resurrected itself as readily and as quickly and as miraculously as the ego, we'd live for 1,000 years. Forget 100, we'd live for 1,000 years. But unfortunately it does. And no matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. And as a human being, I may be on that pink cloud for a while. But what is going to happen? As a human being, I'm going to come into conflict with other human beings. I'm going to want something that they have, or they're going to want to take something that I covet, and I'm going to fear them, I'm going to resent them, and when I do, I'm operating on self-will. It says in the big book, when harboring, to give safe haven, to such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit and the food will return. If I could put it this way, because I don't have a lot of time up here, and if you know me, it 10 minutes usually just takes me to tell you my name and whatever. But anyway, so I'm kind of giving the Reader's Digest version here, but the bottom line is, for me, this story illustrates it. When I was about 8 years old, I decided that I was, and I'm born and raised in Chicago, I decided I was going to make myself a salami sandwich. And I used a knife that I was told never to touch. Never to touch. I used that knife. And I cut my finger so badly, if you give me 25 cents, I'll show you the scar when this is over, so horribly, and my mother didn't drive a car, or I would have gone to the hospital for stitches. My mother didn't drive, but she could scream. Boy, could she scream. And when she saw me bleeding like that, she went into hysterics, and boy, that whole kitchen was bloody. It was unbelievable. That was when I was 8. I'm 56. To this day, when I am cutting with a knife, I am hesitant. I am cautious. I am respectful of what that knife could do to me. Especially now I'm 56. I'm on Coumadin as a blood thinner. Now if I get cut, I really bleed, if you know how that affects you. But anyway, that aside, food beat me down and did things to me that if I did them to you, I would be in a penitentiary. If I did to you what the food did to me, I would be an inmate at a prison right now. And yet, the insanity of the food returns, and I will eat again. Because if I am angry, resentful, fearful, if I am in self-pity, self-seeking, selfishness, and I think I know better than God how the world should go, what you should do, or what you should stop doing, and what it all means is I am going to eat again, and I will not be able to recall the pain and the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that the food has wrought into my life until I surrender. Now, surrender for me is not, I surrender, that's not going to get me anywhere. This is not, for me, a program for people who need it. It is not a program for people who want it. This is a program for people who do it. It's an action program. There's no chapter in here that says into thinking or praying. It's a chapter says into action. If I am not doing 10, 11, and 12 every day, a million times a day, I am going to eat again. And it is that simple, and yet it is that evident to me, that true to me. I must do 10, 11, and 12. I've been around these rooms for 31 years. Qualifies me as an expert on nothing. But what I've seen and what I've witnessed, and I've graduated from OA several times. Came in 79, left in 83, came back in 86, left in 88. And, you know, every time, you know, they always play the same damn graduation song. Welcome to McDonald's. May I take your order, please? To which the graduate, the recent graduate, resoundingly replies, yes, and could I get an apple pie with that? So it's always the same graduation ceremony. But what I need to do is say, here's what I've seen in 31 years. People start working the steps. And what we're told is three is but a beginning. You know, one of the things that bugs me is, and this is just an aside, I did the 1, 2, 3 waltz. Now, if you did three, you're doing 4 through 12, because three is the surrender step. We're talking up here about surrender versus compliance. Three is the formal terms of surrender. You can't do three by uttering a prayer. You do three by picking up a notebook and starting on 4, 5, 6, 7, all the way to 12. So, where was I going with this? Oh, unless I'm doing these steps every day, I'm going to eat again. Fact. I'm going to eat again. The people that I've seen, because I've done it, if you spot it, you got it. If it makes you mad, you got it bad. What I've seen is they do a great and just, and then boom, stop. Most relapses occur about 90 days before the food goes in the mouth, when the actions stop. And then they're dieting on group support. I cannot diet with group support and stay out of the food. If I could, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't need this program. I'd be home dieting, watching cartoons or whatever, I don't know, but whatever, I wouldn't be here. Thank God that doesn't work. This is the greatest way of life I have ever seen. I want this. Remember when we were kids, probably I'm not alone? Time's up. I got to shut up. I'll just finish with this. We'd say, oh, if you could take a pill and lose the weight, would you take it? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Hoping somewhere somebody had such a pill. I wouldn't miss this for the world. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. What a glorious way to live. What a magnificent way to live. I'll shut up. I'm sorry. That's enough out of me.
All right. Thank you, Harlan. So now what we're going to do is we're going to have a little discussion time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you guys to I'm just going to put you in little groups, Julie. I'm just going to walk down the aisle and put you in little groups. I'm going to give you a quote. These are all from As Bill Sees It. And some of you, and if you didn't get a handout, please come and see me afterwards because I can probably get you some here. On the back of this one is the As Bill Sees It quote, several of them. Here are some of them you're going to get as a topic. So and then we're going to have about 15 minutes. You guys are going to just go around your little circle and just have a little discussion on the topic I give you. And then at the end of that 15 minutes, I'm going to come around with a basket. If you have any questions, we'll have a question and answer period, and we'll just have an ask it basket. So as you're having your discussion, or if anything up here has, you know, if you have a question about any of this, I'll collect it at the end of your discussion time in about 15 minutes. Okay.
Okay, we're going to start with the, you can continue to, okay. Thank you, guys. So now we're going to do a little question and answer period. I'll continue to walk around if we have I'm just going to pass this basket around. I'm just going to keep passing it around. Then
I'll just continue to collect questions while we go through these. Okay. I'm surrendered when I'm in a lot of pain. How do I stay in surrender rather than compliance when I'm not in some unbelievable pain? How do I stay in surrender rather than compliance when I'm not in searing unbearable pain? Okay. Anyone?
Keep working the steps. Keep working the steps. You shouldn't have to be in searing unbelievable pain to continue working the steps. You cannot keep this unless you give it away. You cannot give this away unless you're doing it. There are magical miracles that happen in passing this on. There are miracles beyond human comprehension. When you see somebody coming in and they are dying, or they are dead woman walking or dead man walking, and they come into these rooms crawling on their stomach because that's the only way they're going to stay. And to work this program continually and to pass it to others is magic. If I'm in a place where I need to be in searing unbelievable pain so that I will continue working the steps, I have not yet surrendered. I am not yet ready to recover. It says on page 28 of the big book of AA, I must seek this with the desperation of a drowning man. If this is not the most important thing in my life, if I'm still questioning when I should do it, how I should do it, the instructions are in the big book of AA. If I'm still questioning that, I probably have a lot more beatings from the food left in me. I'm probably still thinking. And if I'm thinking about how I'm maybe going to do a little of this today, but not that today, or maybe I'll just cut back and I'll just go here instead of there, or do this instead of that. No. Searing unbelievable pain doesn't have to be a constant part of my life. There's going to be enough. But no matter what happens, everything will go better when I'm working the steps. And that doesn't mean that I'm free of pain. It does not mean that. Does not mean that I'm not going to have human things happen to me. I got divorced 6 months ago. After 18 years of marriage, my wife said, I want a divorce. I'm down 9 pounds since the divorce. I'm down a lot of money, but I'm down 9 pounds since the divorce. No food has come into my mouth that doesn't belong there. And hopefully nothing has come out of my mouth that shouldn't have come out of my mouth either. I can treat her with the same love, tolerance, respect that I would treat any sick person or any person that I come in contact with. She is a worthwhile human being. She just doesn't want to be married to me anymore. That's okay. And for the first 6 months of this divorce, I have survived in abstinence thus far, working the steps. I don't question should I just do them.
Thank you. I think that answers that very well. Okay, next question. So I know I need it, but I don't want it. What do I do? Next question.
If you don't want it, this isn't the choice for you, I think. Right now, it's just a matter of timing. I think that when we come into this program and start working, it's the time to... I had to want it. I had to really want something. Now, I didn't know what it was that I was going to get or what I wanted, but I knew that I wanted to change. So if you're not willing to change, in the spiritual experience, it says change 5 times in that one page. If you're not willing to change right now, then go out and do some more eating and see how life is, and then when you're ready to come in, the program's going to be there always. Thanks.
How do we stop playing God?
Work the steps. Reread chapter 5 until it's seared in your brain. There is a God. There's two things I need to know about God today. There is one, and it's not me. Those are the only two things I need to know about God today. There is one, and it's not me. If I'm still running around playing God, I haven't worked the steps. If I'm still running around playing God, I have not conceptualized the first five chapters of the big book of AA. Because if me being God worked, I wouldn't need this program. You would need something, because my self-will, my selfishness, and my self-seeking would wreak havoc on not only my life, but anyone around me. Most of us take seven people to hell with us. Most of us will take seven people to hell on our way because we want to play God. And the height of audacity for me today is to think I know what's best for anyone else, including me. I'm going to let God decide. First five chapters of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it starts with the steps. It finishes with the steps. I am not God.
I got nothing.
I know they're making this very clear. I'm just going to pass this around again. So if you have more questions, we will have time. Okay, next question. One of the most difficult emotions for me is contentment. I am not used to it. What do I do? One of the most difficult emotions for me is contentment. I am not used to it. What do I do?
Work the steps.
You know, for me, and I wasn't either, and I'm a very anxious person, but when I developed a pattern of some meditation and prayer in the morning, that helped immensely. And that came in time, little by little. For right now, I'm working on step 11 with my new sponsor, and I got back into the St. Francis prayer. And that kind of covers it. I mean, when I read that, I feel a calmness and peace around me. And if I can absolutely sit for 5 minutes, just try 5 minutes of meditation, quiet, that helps me immensely with being who I am. In other words, and step 10 says, too, that God's already within us. God's there. And I'm using God as my higher power, so you're just filling the blank. It's already there. We just have to clear all the crap out and so God has a clear channel. That's what really worked for me. Thanks.
If you really want a state of constant contentment, I would also suggest start doing some work at the inner group level. They'll knock it out of you.
Those are laughs of identification, I think.
Okay. The program is based in action, but a plan of action as a tool. Isn't this physical action, not working the tools, working the steps? Not intellectual or spiritual action, but physical action, right? So this says, I think what they're asking is, the program is based on action, but a plan of action as a tool. So they're not an intellectual or spiritual action, but physical action. So they're questioning the spiritual component of surrender, possibly. And but if you have a plan of action, a physical action, then that's going to get you there. I don't know, whatever you interpret that, I guess you can answer. However you interpret that, you can answer it. And if whoever asks the question, if this isn't the question you're asking, just come up after.
Well, when I gave you my 10 minutes, I told you what I do each day. And that's my plan of action. This program is all about action. I can't sit, and I'm not going to get anywhere just sitting and listening, really. That was before. But I developed a plan of action. All over, even add in your exercise. I have to exercise each day. Yeah, I do. I started out walking. That's, you know, and now I have other things, but there's no magic to it. The action of the program, it's all the things I described, you know, prayer and meditation, writing, reading, calling my sponsor every day. I figure out what my food's going to be the night before, give it to her. You know, I follow a food plan. I make my calls. I make outreach calls. And I take my sponsee calls. All that stuff. Go to meetings. I do all those things, and that's my action. I wouldn't be where I am today without taking all those actions. So, yeah, it's spiritual, but that's the result. I mean, the action is the physical thing. I have to do it. Thanks.
This is a program not for people who need it. It is not a program for people who want it. This is a program for people who do it. And aside from the action of exercise, which I don't think that was the question, or maybe I'm misinterpreting it, I have two German Shepherds, and every once in a while I think, I really don't want to walk today, because I, you know, I take them on long walks. They won't hear of that, so I've got to get out there and do that, or I'll be looking at two faces and, you know, Dad, I want to go. I don't think that was the question. What I think the question is that physical action. Yes, there's physical action. I must take myself and say, hi, I'm really sorry I took money from you that I didn't pay you back. Hi, I'm really sorry that I said that. Hi, I'm really sorry that I didn't do this. I have to make amends in nine. I have to often write letters. A lot of my amends were for people who were dead. My mom and dad, my mom's gone 35 to 36 years this year, and my dad has gone 33, 34 years this year. They were not around when I came into recovery, so I had to write them letters. And the first couple of letters I wrote, my sponsor tore to shreds. And he said, this is an indictment. This is not a letter. So I had to write and write and write, and I have to make amends, and I have to pray, and I have to meditate, and I have to work with other people, and I have to get my buns to meetings. And I have to go to a place in Scottsdale where right near our North Scottsdale Fellowship Club is one of the coffee places, and we go there, and I work with newcomers all the time, because the newcomers that we introduced at the very beginning of this meeting are the life's blood of this organization. The newest person in this room is the most important person in the room, because if we don't take that physical action of passing it to them, we cannot keep it. This is lightning in a bottle, but if we don't spread it, if we don't pass it on, we cannot harness it. We do not keep it if we don't pass it on. And there has been action after action after action that I have to take, and will continue to take, God willing, to pass that to the new person. And in so doing, I get to recover. And that's an action part. I hope I've answered the question. I wasn't quite sure, but I'll shut up. That's an environment.
Okay, now some of these we may have already covered, but I'm going to ask these questions anyways, because sometimes we hear things in a different way. What are the actions to move from compliance to surrender?
The actions that the recovering person takes or the suffering person takes?
Well, if you're in compliance, you might still be suffering.
Okay.
What are the actions to move from compliance to surrender? Yeah, someone in the front.
Well, okay, I'm going to just tell you what I did. I think that it's complete acceptance that I'm a compulsive overeater and that I have a disease. And once I get to that point and I'm 100%, then I can be 100% surrendered. If I have full acceptance of who I am and what the problem is, then I can surrender. If I'm in compliance, there's still questions in my head. I'm not quite there. And the other thing that happens, too, is that when there's questions, it will stop me from accepting. But, you know, for me, it took complete acceptance of myself, complete acceptance of everybody in the room, and then realizing that, yes, my sponsor has this, too, and she's recovering. I could do what she does, and I can stop questioning. Hopefully that's kind of what the question was about. I think that's what it was for me anyway. Thanks.
I hate to sound redundant, but the only way to move from compliance to surrender is by suffering the kind of pain that one in their imagination cannot even conjure. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization at the hands of an illness that I did not understand. I ran around these rooms for a long time and said, hi, I'm Harlan, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I said it because everyone else did. I really did not understand what a compulsive overeater is. And on page 60, it says, A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. I didn't understand what a compulsive overeater is. I have a physical allergy that Dr. Silkworth describes in the doctor's opinion that sets me apart from 90% of the world. 1 out of 10 people has a physical reaction to the food which is abnormal. In other words, in a normal person's body, that food will pass through them to the point where every time they eat a meal, they get all the food they want. When I ate a meal, the more I eat, the more I want. The more I want, the more I eat, and it's just endless. But there's another component to it, and that is the strange mental twist, the mental obsession. What is an obsession? It's a thought that pushes aside all thoughts to the contrary, willpower, for instance. There is nothing I can do about the physical allergy. I was born with it, and I'll die with it. The only thing I can do is work the steps, I think I said that before, work the steps to arrest temporarily the mental obsession. And when I am working the steps, I do not find it necessary for my brain to seek out the one thing it knows will work to give me that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by eating the food. I eat the food, trigger the allergy, pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to do that again. And I will repeat that over and over and over again. I have to have repeated it so many times that the fear of eating outweighs the fear of giving up the food. Let me say that again. The fear of eating must outweigh the fear of giving up the food. And until I am at that jumping off point, I am not going to take these actions. B, that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. There are people probably in this room that are well situated financially. There are people in this room probably that are not well situated financially. There are people in this room of all manner of human condition, sick, ill, married, divorced, whatever, death, illnesses, whatever. But there's one thing we have in common. Human money, power, fame, what have you, will not cure you of this malady that God could and would if he were sought. See that God could and would if he were sought. And how do I seek God? I have to work the steps. And that's the only way I get from the compliance. Gee, it would be nice if these guys could show me how I could eat and still not gain weight. That would be great. Or if they could give me some information on a diet. I'm not going to recover with information. I'm going to recover with identification. One to the other. One to the other. It's no different when Bill met Bob than it is this morning here on February 6th at the OA birthday. It's no different. One person sharing their thoughts and actions about an illness that gives the other person a feeling like, hey, maybe if it worked for her, it would work for me. Hey, maybe if they did this and I did this too, I wouldn't need to compulsively overeat. And that's where it has to be for me. I'll shut up. That's enough out of me.
Okay, so the last question. I want to surrender. I don't know how. How to shut my thinking and planning.
Yeah, I'll go ahead. I had a thought when I just read that, or when I just heard it, that reminded me of something. My abstinence is the most important thing to me, and I will protect it like a baby. But sometimes people come to me and say, I think the answer to that is you have to hit bottom. You have to hit bottom before you can even begin to stop thinking and planning. Because your ego's keeping you thinking and planning, basically. So I had a thought people have come to me in the past and said, I broke my abstinence in that 8 years I was out. I actually kept it for a long time. Because I have very, very good willpower, like we all do, right? but I ended up breaking it because I wasn't doing any of the work. People come to me sometimes and say, well, you know, my abstinence is 3 meals a day and no sugar, as mine is. But you know what, I had some sugar the other day, and I really don't want to start over, and you know, I think I'm just going to keep going and whatever. For me, I think that we have to have our feet firmly planted. And I think the only way that that happens is if we're surrendered and that we hit a bottom that we want to actually, you know, stop overeating. We actually want to stop. And then we have the tools to do that. So I guess what I want to say is that when to cure the thinking and planning, which doesn't really help, if we're at a point where we hit bottom like I did, and we have our feet on the ground working with a sponsor, I think that's the way that we're able to surrender. I think that's what happened for me, and that's what I would tell anybody that asked me about that, that, you know, it's a black and white thing. So that was my thought on that.
I believe that happiness begins where selfishness ends. If I am sick in self, and I am thinking about me, 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 it says in chapter 5, selfishness, self-seeking, self-centered fear is the root of our trouble. I have to be out of self to be a happy person. I have a God-sized hole in my gut. Money won't fill it. Sex won't fill it. Fame won't fill it. Put anything you want in there, there's never going to be enough. It's a God-sized hole. And I did not come here looking for God. I did not come here to find happiness. I did not come here to find my fellow sick, compulsive overeater. But in seeking the next sick, compulsive overeater, I found all three. I must remember what Bill Wilson teaches me and the first 100 teach me. The first 100 and Bill Wilson teach me lessons every day. Bill Wilson, between Ebby and his going to Akron, Ohio, he believed that he had a destiny to sober up drunks. He did not know how to do that, but the vision was very clear to him. Bill always maintained he had a spiritual experience, which is the wording of the first edition, but it's now awakening, which is a whole other thing, but that's fine. I won't get sidetracked, I promise. Okay. He believed that this was his destiny. And the Oxford groupers were telling him, you've got to be of maximum service. Go get stockbrokers and bring them into the Oxford group. That's why on page 77 it says, my main purpose is to be of maximum service to God and those around me. That's Oxford group language that he uses in the big book. But what Bill knew was that this was his destiny. He could see it. But nobody was getting sober. And Lois Wilson changed the world. Bill Wilson came home. Is that for me to shut up? Okay. Bill Wilson came home after trying to pull these guys off the bar stools in New York City and bring them to the Oxford group meetings. And he comes home and he says to Lois, this doesn't work. I'm wrong that this doesn't work. That trying to sober up these other people has no effect on them. And Lois Wilson changed the history of planet Earth when she turned to him and said, but you're staying sober. But you're staying sober. And that was the only time in his adult life that he was staying sober. And he said, oh, yeah. And so he got that affirmation. I'll tell you a secret, but don't tell anyone in Scottsdale. I don't care if you recover. Now, that's a very selfish, not nice thing to say. I really don't. Working with you keeps me out of the dang food for one more minute or one more day. That's what I'm doing it for. Don't tell anyone in Arizona, though. Okay? I'll shut up. That's enough out of me. I'm sorry.
All right. So we have about 20 minutes, and what we're going to do is we're going to open it up for sharing. And I just want you to think about the experience you've had here today. Well, afterwards, come up. We're just out of time for the question part, but thank you. Just come up after.
So think about your experience here today, maybe what you want to leave here, any kind of aha moments that you've had. Let's keep the energy in the room. I heard an old-timer share, you know, if your palms are getting sweaty and your heart's pounding, that's God tapping you on the shoulder, telling you to get up there and share. And, you know, so I'm open up with you, share, and just raise your hand.
Do we get off? Do we do an hour or say after?
You guys are done.
Okay.
Yeah.